Hello everyone and welcome to another end of week edition of Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms, editor-in-chief of The Unshackled. It is Friday the 13th of March 2020, and to say it's a spooky day is an understatement. It is just past 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in Auckland. And it's good to see you all again. I see the notifications have gone out and everyone's coming in. I'm just sharing the link to all the right places.
So we're live on the Unshackled's YouTube channel and also the Right Minds YouTube channel and also the Tim Wilms DLive channel. The Unshackled's YouTube channel is monetized. So if you haven't spent all of your money yet on emergency supplies, then please help the Unshackled out, bringing you all the news and analysis during this time of uncertainty. So you can just in the live chat press the dollar button there to send through a super chat, and I'll read it out on the air. And on DLive, you can send through lemons or ice cream to support the production of this show.
And I have got this up on the Right Minds YouTube channel. There should be a post up on the BFD as well, so we'll have some people come through from there. And if you do want to do a super chat, just go through to Tim's channel, The Unshackled, and I'll be monitoring the chat and as we go through the topics of this week. And the biggest thing that we've got unfolding is obviously still the coronavirus here in New Zealand as well. We are coming up to the anniversary of the first anniversary of the March 15th terrorist attacks in against the Christchurch mosques. So there's a lot of news around that as well in terms of what's happening there, and most of it again with all of the news that's happening in both of our countries will be everything's tainted with the coronavirus, basically. You know, the coronavirus situation is impacting absolutely everything.
It certainly dominated the Australian news today. There was an emergency COAG meeting in Parramatta in Sydney at the Bankwest Stadium, which all the reporters were there saying, look at this empty stadium, this could be the immediate future. So Scott Morrison met with all the state premiers and territory leaders. And so what they've agreed upon is that starting Monday is that all non-essential gatherings of 500 people plus will be cancelled. So it means that this weekend's of sport will take place, though the Grand Prix was cancelled at the last minute after one of the members of the McLaren team tested positive for coronavirus. Of course, that's the opening Formula One Grand Prix of the season. So disappointed a lot of people, especially those who'd made special plans to be at Albert Park for the weekend. This 500 plus gathering ban doesn't apply to schools, universities, airports, and public transport, because the virus to transmit from person to person requires you to be in their company for an extended period of time. And obviously at a football stadium, the game goes for 2 or 3 hours. You're sitting next to the same person in your assigned seat there. But obviously public transport, you might only be sitting next to the same person for an hour at most. Same with schools and university.
I'm not sure if I would trust the whole, oh, it's fine, you're just going to be sitting next to someone with coronavirus for 1 hour. You'll be fine.
Well, I'm just talking about the how it's transmitted the virus. Of course, you can still, it's transmitted I've forgotten the term, but through those droplets in the skin, that's how it's transmitted. But obviously, if you're the more you're exposed to somebody, obviously there's the longer you are, and it can stay on surfaces for 2 to 3 hours. There's a lot of, we're still medical professionals are still learning a lot about the virus, and this is contributing to the uncertainty, the panic and hysteria and uncertainty.
I can imagine that because the last thing I've heard about how long it lasts for is days or something. They can last on surfaces for days. Has that now changed to just hours?
Well, that's what I heard today. As I
Okay.
said,
Well,
we're hearing
that would be the
lots of
latest.
different.
That would be the latest. What they were saying weeks ago was I can last on surfaces for it was like 3 to 5 days or something. But if it's been revised downward to mere hours, then and it may depend on the strain as well. There's at least two strains going around as well, I believe, and one of them is a bit more a bit more a bit stronger, a bit more harmful than the other. But in New Zealand, we've only had 5 confirmed cases, so there hasn't been any immediate repercussions in terms of everything being shut down. Although it has been announced today that the Pacifica festival has been cancelled in Auckland, but other than that, there have been no major gatherings cancelled. There have been various concerts have gone ahead even after coronavirus, the first coronavirus cases were announced, and they didn't announce any new cases today. So we shall see how it goes. Everybody's expecting it to spread further. A lot of businesses are taking precautionary measures, doing extra cleaning. The warehouse has been sending out emails saying that they're wiping down surfaces. They'll be ramping up home deliveries. Various other companies as well. I saw for a message from Noel Leeming just before doing something similar, and a lot of businesses are planning, work from home procedures. What happens if all of their staff have to go into isolation and so on. And I suspect all of that is far more advanced in Australia. You've had this conversation for several weeks now, right?
And it's just broken just before we went to air that Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton has coronavirus, which is that's a pretty significant development. So obviously he's in isolation. He had a sore throat and a fever this morning. So being obviously a cabinet minister who meets with lots of people, he did the sensible thing and got tested and came back positive. I just had a brief look at Twitter there, and of course they're all saying, "Oh, please send him to Nauru or Manus Island." There's been talk about, "Oh, this is not a time for politics."
Yeah.
But
It's
it's
always
continued.
time for politics.
Yeah,
Everything's
and
politics.
there's already this theory going around that Scott Morrison has decided to delay the ban on gatherings of 500 plus, so he can go to the Cronulla Sharks this weekend, like he already said that he would. But also because it's the final 2 days of a Hillsong conference, which Scott Morrison finally confessed that he did invite the leader of Hillsong, Brian Houston, to be a guest at the White House state dinner way back in the middle of last year. And so there's also people on Twitter saying, "Oh, he's putting the health of the nation at risk, so his happy clapper pedo mates can complete the 2 last days of their conference, so they can get those extra donations and sell all of those merchandise and whatever."
Of course it is, yeah. And we've actually had sort of a similar bit of speculation going on here in New Zealand in that Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has specifically not cancelled the March 15th memorials in Christchurch and around the country, even though a couple of other events have been cancelled, like I mentioned, Pacifica Festival at the beginning. So she said that this could change in the next 24 hours if the advice from her officials change. So she's basically sort of saying, "Oh, the medical experts say it's okay now. It might change later." The commemorations would be on Sunday on the that which is the 15th. So things are still up in the air at this point, but it's clear that she really wants this to go ahead because this is sort of her, to be cynical, sort of another opportunity for photo opportunities. That's what a lot of her critics would say, me being one of them. I suppose it's actually, I do think that she's probably genuine in that she wants this commemoration to happen. And there's been some other controversy around this with some Muslim groups saying that in Islam they don't have anniversaries of things, and so they didn't want to have an anniversary commemoration. Then they quickly trotted out another imam who said, oh no, it's fine. And obviously, on the right, you had some conflicting arguments there. It was like, oh no, we have to have the commemorations, because that's, or they should have the commemorations because they should be fitting into what we're doing. And then other people saying, oh no, we shouldn't have the commemorations because they don't want to have the commemorations. It's like, like I said, everything becomes political to people, and then there's all of these debates around this. And we are with the coronavirus in the air, all the puns intended there. It will be interesting to see if that changes tomorrow. Obviously, they'll do another review tomorrow and see if they are announcing any kind of quarantine measures in New Zealand over the next few days. If we don't get more confirmed cases, and I don't know how much testing they're doing, but if we don't get more confirmed cases, then nothing's going to change. That's that simple.
You live close to Auckland Airport, and we just heard a plane go past the Corona 747. That's another thing that came out of, well, it's not COAG anymore. It's now a national cabinet, basically to signify that this is, it's not obviously we're not in a war, but it's on footing with a war cabinet, that they've urged Australians to cancel their overseas travel plans. And touching upon, you're one of Jacinta's critics, and I agree that she wants these commemorations to go ahead to remind everyone, look how good my leadership was during this time. Remember how the world loved me because of this. And of course, New Zealand's got an election in September.
And she's been struggling a little bit more in terms of popularity, getting a negative reaction. She's still doing very well in the preferred prime minister polling, but obviously she does want to bring up her high moments in these months leading up to the election. And this is, definitely for her would be a good case to do that.
Do we know if the hijab's going to come out again?
We're not sure. It's likely. She did wear a hijab last week, I believe, or 2 weeks ago, when it would have been longer. When she was in Fiji a few weeks ago. We'll get to this travel thing. She's back in New Zealand right now, though. But she did wear a hijab in Fiji again. I still need to write an article about this, about the whole hijab and head covering thing and conservative appropriation that she's doing. But that will have to wait until I've got some time. I think everybody is expecting it will be the hijab and the photo shoots that she's been doing, like I said, as recently as less than a month ago.
The anniversary in Australia, obviously it was carried out by an Australian, Brenton Tarrant, who is still in custody awaiting trial. Said previously that the trial was going to be scheduled for first half of this year, but then there's the anniversary, then there's Ramadan as well.
It's been pushed back to June, I believe. Somebody in the chat could confirm if they have a date for it, but they've shifted it back, and that's another issue. They're pushing back the Royal Inquiry as well, to, I believe, Tracy Martin, who's the Internal Affairs Minister, said she wanted to push back to, I believe, as late as like November or September, this year. So like we're a year down since it happened. We haven't finished the Royal Inquiry, which has come back to say, okay, well, how could this have happened? How did he get into this country? How did he get his firearms? How did they not spot him? Was there anything that was missed? All of these things, all of that's still being pushed back to the end of the year now. The trial, again, has been pushed back multiple times to well over a year after it happened. So there's a lot of speculation around just what's going on there. It's kind of like, okay, well, we know what happened, or do we know what happened? Why are they purposefully dragging this out? And rather than giving a quick trial, is it that the application of the New Zealand's justice system, or I should say, put that in air quotes. Basically, the legal system is set up to give minimum sentences to criminals. Therefore, if they do get him convicted, he's obviously still the alleged perpetrator at this point because he hasn't had a trial yet. If they do get him on whatever charges, then they would have to give him like a, you know, a sentence that people would get very angry at, because that's the kind of sentence, you know, these weak sentences are sentences that they hand out to everybody else. So they maybe try to reconcile that to figure out, okay, well, how do we specifically give this guy a different sentence to everybody else, and then not have that act as a precedent that we now have to actually, you know, give more appropriate and give more just sentences. So I suspect that's a big part of the struggle, unless there's something weird going on in the background, and the conspiracy theory people maybe are right, who knows. Because those are the only real options as to why it has to be delayed and delayed and delayed. You know, the classic example of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln is one. The guy who assassinated Abraham Lincoln, you know, they caught him, they tried him 2 days later, and then he was executed, you know, about a week after the assassination. You know, justice was done swiftly. It was seen to be done. Everybody saw it. It was over. It was done. And we now in the 21st century seem to be in a situation where we drag these things out and go on and on and on. We get huge media cycles, you know, that go on and on and on for years on these subjects. I suppose they get to make tons of money. These people get to be really famous when they do this. It's sort of a vicious cycle. And in the end, they don't really dish out justice because, well, they have to go squishy. They have to be soft on crime, right? They have to be compassionate even to the worst, most horrible people. They still have to hand out these you know, he had a difficult childhood, and so therefore we're going to reduce his sentence. And that's what they do to everybody else. Well, now they've got a problem.
Well, that's why the US, when they captured bin Laden, they just killed him and then put his body in a coffin, threw it out to sea, and it was done.
Yeah, and it was exactly.
Because they knew that it would drag out for years in, well, how they're going to try him in one of those quasi-international judicial bodies. Yeah. I mean, those war crimes tribunals, I mean, are they even real courts? And the fact that they go on for years and then the alleged war criminal dies before they even have a criminal record.
Yeah, and so it really feels like we're in that kind of situation where it's a rort, basically, where people are you know, these people get paid for dragging the process on, so they drag it on forever.
Senator Slayer sent through a super chat in the Unshackled YouTube chat. Tim, does your chest hair correct you from corona? Well, maybe if it's thick enough, it can stop the droplets seeping out. Obviously, they tell you not to touch your face or nose. You've obviously got that thick beard.
It acts as a natural filter. They the CDC put out all these fake promotional posters to say that you know, you couldn't wear a mask with a beard, and so that you should shave it off. All of that's fake. You just need to have a thick beard, and it will protect you against coronavirus. That's the only way.
So who's laughing now when it comes to...
It's coming back to the coronavirus thing now, you know, you're talking about... It was Peter Dutton, right? The
Home Affairs Minister.
The Home Affairs Minister. Like the deportation guy, right? That's the... he's the only one of your ministers that people in New Zealand know. But, you know, it's reached the top of the Australian government. It's reached the top of the American government, the Brazilian government, the Iranian government. It seems to have a really swift path to the top, the way that this virus spreads. And I think it'll be quite interesting to look back at the spread once this is all over. And they're saying this could last for even 2 years, you know, like the Spanish flu did, where it just sort of went in waves and cycles. The way that it's reached very high ranking officials very, very quickly, and the numbers are supposedly low, the infection rate is supposedly very, very low. That's quite a strange situation. They had a number of people at CPAC in America, APAC, America-Israel conference, conservative conference, and then the America-Israel conference. They have various high-profile infections there. it's really, yeah, it's really, I suppose, in that sense, quite a strange way that it works its way to the top.
Well, Justin Trudeau's wife, Sophie, she's been diagnosed with coronavirus.
Right,
obviously,
that's the other one I missed.
Yeah, Tom Hanks yesterday was diagnosed with he and his wife coronavirus. And the thing that all these people have in common, apart from they're at the top, is that they're jet setters all around the world. And because obviously politicians, they're obviously, well, they're meeting lots of people as well, and this is how the virus has spread so rapidly, because we're living in a globalization world.
And that's it. And that's a big theme that's come through from you know, the various countries closed their borders. The number of flights to many countries have completely dried up. Although in New Zealand, you heard that plane coming up overhead, we still have planes coming from China, we still have planes coming from Korea, we still have planes coming from Italy. In New Zealand, we have got very few border lockdowns. The resistance, the attempt to sort of keep the globalist and the globalized, you know, open borders sort of dream world open, that is still ongoing. And they won't, you know, especially here in New Zealand, very, very resistant, very hesitant to shut that down. But that basically is the inevitable outcome of this virus. And people are going to be looking at their supply chains, because thankfully everybody decided to go and buy toilet paper. But we have local toilet paper factories, right? It's the stuff like the Panadol that comes from China. Okay, people are not panic buying Panadol, but maybe they should be, because you know, if the factories in China shut down, which they seem to have the situation under control now, apparently. But if that were to have happened, well, then you've got your various medicines that you're not going to get. If Italy is shut down forever, if you have important goods that come from Italy or from Korea, from Singapore, if these places were out of action for a long period of time and you're getting your essential goods from there, then you're going to be facing very serious shortages. And a lot of people, I hope, are reassessing the globalized supply chains and thinking, hey, maybe we need a little bit more resilience and we can be slightly less efficient in making sure, but slightly more expensive, but at least we have the guarantee. We pay a little bit extra for that guarantee to make sure we keep the local supply chains intact, so that we don't get our entire economy wiped out by a pandemic.
That's interesting, that because obviously Australia is heavily dependent on Chinese trade as well, and we've often talked about the fact that both New Zealand political parties are in the pocket of China, but only 5 cases, where because there's a large Chinese community in New Zealand, especially in Auckland, that's the case. I mean, there's still a lot of anti-Chinese theorists around. Maybe to say thanks to New Zealand, the Chinese gave the antidote to Jacinta Ardern, and she's, I don't know, put it in the water or something, so yeah, nobody gets coronavirus.
It's not the case in New Zealand. We had a The Chinese sort of community in New Zealand, at least, have tended to be a lot more careful very quickly. You had a lot of the panic buying was going on in various Asian communities as well. Very early on, before we had any cases at all, you saw pictures of a lot of people wearing masks. I mean, I went out, was out there in East Auckland, and a lot of people wearing masks, you know, without a single confirmed case in New Zealand. And this being a smaller country, it being one of the more sort of more expensive Western countries as well, I think you have a different, you have less sort of seasonal temporary Chinese workers here, which that seems to have been exactly what happened to Italy. They had all of these seasonal workers come back at that time to Italy, and I think we just got the timing right and the quantity, you know, the way that people were traveling and the kind of industries that we were, you know, were seasonally running in New Zealand were less conducive to getting it, because the places where it came from was not directly from China, but was from Iran and from Italy, where obviously it came there from China first. So you had the movement of people was out to these other countries first before it came to New Zealand.
Obviously, New Zealand had that globalization libertarian revolution in the from the mid 80s to the mid 90s. Before that, it was known as Fortress New Zealand, and it's still considered the last place on Earth. But it seems that despite that revolution, it is still quite an isolated country.
Just geographically isolated. Well, with Fortress New Zealand, we were very economically isolated. Now we, and I don't think very many people want to necessarily go back to the whole Fortress New Zealand situation. They'd probably take a middle ground somewhere between what we have now and that. But the geographical isolation is what protects us from a lot of things as well. So, even though we joke about the Australia being the West Island and New Zealand and Australia being very close to each other, you could basically put all of Europe in between us. You could put very, some very, very large countries and sandwich them between New Zealand and Australia. It's just that far away from everywhere.
The toilet paper panic buying, that's now spread to other Western nations. You mentioned that it's now happened in New Zealand, and of course, since we last spoke on the weekend just past in Australia, there are a few epic fights in the supermarket. I'm sure you saw them
Yes,
online.
I got some clips of that, and we did. I think we had toilet paper panic buying in small parts of the country. So certain parts of Wellington, certain parts of Auckland, it was quite specific where it was happening. I didn't see any of it. Then again, I've been avoiding the shops and so on. Being prepared beforehand. I believe we talked about that on the last show, but it's important to have some supplies ready for any kind of natural disaster that could happen, and then you don't have to go into the supermarket and brawl with somebody over the last can of tuna or the last roll of toilet paper. So, but regardless of that, we still have had our toilet paper factories running overtime, and they've had to work extra hours, bring in extra staff just to make extra toilet paper to meet up with the demand. Like I said, it's lucky it was a run on toilet paper because we make it locally. So people should just be glad that toilet paper was the test run. I'm not sure why toilet paper was selected, but somebody spreading rumors, sort of a game of Chinese whispers maybe, in getting this toilet paper panic going all over Australia, New Zealand, and I suspect many other countries. So that's that, and that has led to more economic activities. And I suppose this is a good segue into the economic side, where people are spending their money on spending their money on toilet paper, keeping the GDP numbers going, keeping the cash flowing, the consumerism going to keep the economy propped up. The Reserve Bank has basically said there's nothing to worry about. Jacinda Ardern has said we're doing some specific targeted packages at the businesses that are the hardest hit, especially those that have just been affected by the shutdowns in China, because we had a lot of industry grind to a halt simply because of trade with China just basically stopping for several weeks. And the Reserve Bank has specifically said they're not cutting the interest rates at the moment. They're not doing anything special. They're waiting until the 25th of March before doing another review. So we're not going to see the OCR drop. We're not going to see any kind of stimulus packages in New Zealand, according at least currently, as of today, according to the Reserve Bank and according to Cabinet. So this is quite a different response to what you're seeing in America, where the Feds are pumping trillions of dollars of printing trillions of dollars, and Australia dropping your OCR. Of course, you can talk a little bit about what other measures you're taking, but very specifically, New Zealand is not taking any economic measures, which is quite an interesting approach. I think I've seen some people say, oh, panic, we need to do something. But I'm more of the, I think in this particular case, I actually agree with the strategy of the Reserve Bank and Jacinda Ardern in that there's nothing. At this point, there's not necessarily anything that has to be done yet, and just printing more money is not, a short-term solution. Printing more money, people love doing that, but there's never any long-term advantages to printing money.
Well, the media and the commentariat, they'd been agitating the Morrison government to introduce fiscal stimulus for pure political reasons, so they could blow the budget surplus and to say, "Ha ha, you promised a, you said it was going to be a budget surplus. You said you're back in black. Ha ha. Now you're not." Well, they did announce a stimulus package this week. The total is 17.6 billion, plus the Reserve Bank is going to pump $6 billion of new money into the economy. More than 6 million welfare recipients are going to receive a one-off cash payment of 750 from March 31st. There's been, this includes pensioners, carers, veterans, families, young people, and the unemployed. There's a few more tax incentives for businesses, including there's a few cash handouts for businesses to help pay wages and keep staff employed, because this is another political thing. The Morrison government, they do not want Australia to go into recession under their watch. We're going to have a recession, and the budget surplus is, but this is obviously nobody could have foreseen this virus. But of course, with the, as I just said before, ScoMo's arrangement syndrome, it's still infected large amounts of the population. And so now, if there's a recession, they're going to say, "Ha, there was a recession under your watch. There wasn't one under Labor during the global financial crisis." So this is where everything is still political, and I think that's why Scott Morrison has taken the line wanting to reassure the public. He had a national address last night where he talked about the health of the nation, health of the economy. This is a prevention containment measure. We want the health system to keep up, because there's queues outside hospitals now to get tested, though we are in a much better position than the United States, which doesn't hardly have what's 5 testing kits to every 1 million Americans.
That I believe they've done something like 77 tests in the past week or something. Yeah, every day there's 77 tests out of 300 million people. That's the one.
So we have, our health system is one of the best in the world, and that's the reason why they're taking these measures to prevent a mass pandemic, just because they know the virus is going to spread. They're not going to contain it, but just if they can contain it enough so that the health system can cope with it.
Yeah, there has been talk in New Zealand of introducing sort of the sort of drive-through testing where people can go to hospitals.
That's been started to be rolled out.
None of that's been implemented yet. Last time I checked, again, the situation check. I believe they just do once daily status update at 1 p.m. So I don't believe any of this has changed. So they're not doing anything special in terms of testing there yet. But it has been pointed out in the chat that there's actually a minimum wage increase that's going to kick in, I believe, on the next month, like the beginning of the month or later on this month. And it's been asked, you know, the opposition said, "Oh, you need to cancel this because it's bad for businesses." And Jacinda's response has basically been, if the minimum wage goes up, then they have to, you know, employees will get paid more and they'll spend more money and that will be good for the economy. I'm not sure if that will go well if people's businesses go under because they have cash flow problems due to, you know, supply chain interruptions, with coronavirus shutting down economies anywhere in the world. But it's not a case of the opposition wanting a recession, because we have a left-wing government. So in America, it's like Trump has to spend up big to show the Democrats, "Oh no, there can't be a recession. There can't be a recession, because then it'll be bad for Trump." Same thing with Scott Morrison in Australia. It looks bad for the right-wing government. In New Zealand, it's more a case of the government being able to be extremely cautious and not being able to, you know, there's no need for them to rush into anything, because it's kind of expected that a left-wing government will have a recession. And so all they need to do is actually just not do anything, and then it won't look so, there's no real expectation for them just to go and do something for the sake of it. I'm going against the conventional economics wisdom on this. Like, I've seen a lot of the economists that I like are saying, "Oh no, they have to do all of the stimulus stuff. They have to go and do it now." I'm just not on board with it. I think there's no particular reason just to go and muck around with the interest rates because of a situation that hasn't yet impacted the economy. What they could do is tax cuts. I talked about this last week, but again, Labor is not going to do tax cuts either. So just nothing's going to happen. And at this point, that's the second best option, because the best option would just be tax cuts, because tax cuts are always good, no matter what's happening.
I suggested last night on the Uncuckables, suspend environmental and planning approval processes, get rid of all the red and green tape, so people can build and construct things without having to go through all the years and years of approvals and all the green groups constantly.
And we need that in New Zealand for a housing crisis that we have been ongoing for years. We probably don't need to drop every regulation, but there's a bunch of very obvious ones that are slowing down the industry, the building industries in New Zealand. There's a lot of little things like that could be done that would just get rid of a huge amount of dead weight in terms of the government handling, and would create massive economic stimulus, generate huge economic activity regardless of coronavirus. But none of that will be undertaken by the Labour government. They're just not going to do that. The National government won't do it either. But if they get in, they won't do anything serious either, because you've got, like you said, Scott Morrison's not going to do what you suggested either. But we do have an election coming up. There is an opportunity for people to vote for actual right-wing options in the new Conservative Party. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Now, before the coronavirus was declared a pandemic, and obviously our government over here has had to take more extreme measures, I did notice that our mainstream media and all the Antifa socialist agitators on social media were trying to build up to the Christchurch massacre anniversary to basically say, oh, remember that white supremacy is the mm-hmm. greatest threat to our nations. And they, I've spoken about it previously, they grasp upon the new ASIO director, Mike Burgess, in his national threat assessment, where he mentioned it was about six paragraphs, the threat of right-wing extremism, where he mentioned specifically neo-Nazis gathering in suburbs, saluting mm-hmm. Nazi flags, which I don't know anyone who does that. He was very specific. Yeah. But as I said today, the we're 2 days from the anniversary, and the attack happened during Friday prayers. Today is Friday. There was some commemorations at the mosque in Christchurch under heavy security, and so all of these articles that the left had put out saying remember white supremacy, it's just been totally pushed down the news items. But it is still, and I did notice that a lot of the Australian Antifa bloggers and tweeters, they've actually gone trans-Tasman and moved over to New Zealand, because apparently
they've exhausted the neo-Nazi search, the Nazi hunt in Australia, so they've come to help us over here.
Yeah, apparently you've got a new neo-Nazi terror cell there called Action Zealander.
Zealandia.
So tell us about them.
I can talk about that a little bit, because I've also been following the Antifa pages, which is actually provides a good bit of entertainment, and it's quite fun to see them go on their little hunts. They seem to have found one guy, so they've kind of, I suppose, wanted something big for the anniversary. So they found one guy who's 19 years old who posts weird stuff on Telegram. They post all of these videos and screenshots from him on there. So supposedly talking about setting up some kind of terror cell in New Zealand. Well, I don't think it was a terror cell. I'm trying to remember what the messenger said exactly, but some kind of small groups. I don't know. It's super vague in terms of whether he's planning any violence, because he hasn't been arrested. And supposedly he said that he's talked to the police and there's no problems. So that was the most recent update from that situation. I've said this like a year ago, because I think Action Zealandia sort of started around a year ago, and they were basically the Dominion movement rehashed, which has now been confirmed as of today. Not that we didn't already know that. And they were linked to an Australian group, and I'm not sure if you know the name. You have some equivalent sort of white nationalist slash neo-Nazi group in Australia that they were linked to. You're looking confused.
Australia's a large nation. There's all of these sort of white nationalist groups that pop up every now and then. If you're talking about explicit neo-Nazi groups, then there's Anti-Poden Resistance, which have over the years put up posters against Jews and homosexuals, quite in your face.
I remember them mentioning that name now, and there was another one that they mentioned, and I didn't write it down, which I probably should have done for the show. But they were linked to that in Australia, and anyway, so they reformed. So
there's Identity. Identity Australia is another one that comes to mind.
Yeah, maybe it was Identity Australia. That sounds similar. That sounds about right. And then they were sort of linked with the Dominion movement in New Zealand, which then reformed. And there's, as far as we know, there's maybe half a dozen to a dozen guys. They can't seem to they're trying to dox them actively, of course. They've had a couple of arrests this past week. So one person was arrested for refusing to comply with a police search.
Which is not an arrest for terrorism or carrying out a terrorist plot.
And another one who was arrested for sharing a document that was posted on the Australian Antifa Twitter accounts, which was a Financial Investigations Unit memo, which is illegal to distribute in New Zealand. So I suppose it's okay for the Australian Twitter groups to post it.
James Fox Higgins, he did a show on Wednesday night where the police are wanting banks to alert them if people are transferring $14.88.
And there's been a couple of items posted on the BFD as well, in terms of what the other items on there were. So like people buying firearms, like spending at gun stores, buying memorabilia, buying like flags and t-shirts, something like that. And off the top of my head, I can't remember. It was quite a strange list. Who knows what the police were intending to do with that. But basically telling the banks, hey, if somebody does some combination of these things, then they may be doing something suspicious and can you alert us about their activity? So that was leaked. I believe it was a woman who worked at a bank. She was arrested for that, but that was simply, again, not for terrorism, but just for sharing a police document or classified information, something along those lines. And there's a guy, the guy I mentioned before, there may have been another guy who was arrested several months ago for sharing military information on 4chan or something, or with some Russian group. I don't have the details in front of me right now. So that basically seems to be it. But there's nobody, no actual, as far as any, you know, there's no terrorism charges, no terrorism activity that direct, you know, that's being directly uncovered, except outside of what looks to be a group of perhaps related, perhaps connected 19-year-olds. They're all right around the age of 19 or so. So that's like the big threat of neo-Nazis in New Zealand is a small handful of these so-called white nationalists. So that's all that, like, that's been all the hype, and a lot of that has been buried, like it has been buried by the coronavirus news, and that's really, you know.
These Antifa groups, they publish their big exposés, and even though they claim to hate the mainstream media, they're desperate for the mainstream media to pick up these exposés that filtered through to the big outlets in New Zealand, any of these.
Yeah, and it does filter through. So there's two, I think they have one or two, I believe I've seen them share two different journalists who they work with. So they, it's the, like, they quote each other as experts. So it's this thing that's like, there's, again, it's the same as these neo-Nazi groups or the Antifa groups. It's like six guys who quote each other and talk to each other. They may have more people working with them. Like, I wonder if this Action Zealandia group, like, I suspect half of them are like GCSB agents and the other half are Antifa infiltrators, something along those lines. You know, they've had this situation in Canada where they had this entire neo-Nazi group they built up, like out of It was like one guy, and then they had a whole bunch of people who were basically their version of the Secret Service agents who were helping this guy build up this movement to try and find neo-Nazis. But they were just like making, they just like built their own group of neo-Nazis, and the same thing in the United States. I saw in these articles from Anti, they were referencing the base, which I believe was taken out because they were, you know, a whole bunch of FBI agents were basically running the place. They've even had Muslim terror cells that have been built up entirely of FBI agents, and they've busted them, and they haven't been able to arrest anybody because out of the like 36 guys, only one or two of them were not actually FBI agents. So there's a point at which they are so busy focused on trying to find, like they're trying to justify their existence, and they end up trying to create their own agencies. And so they create the need for themselves. So the media and these Antifa groups, they try and create or find, you know, they're like, they have to find some Nazis so that they can justify their existence. And the funny part has been just watching it, and they're able to find a couple of people here and there, if they're lucky at that.
I remember after the El Paso white nationalist massacre in the middle of last year, the Guardian, I dug this article up, they reported that more than 175 killed worldwide in the last 8 years in white nationalist links attacks, and the coronavirus has killed 5,000 in round about 3 months. So obviously... Mm-hmm. People are much more concerned about the coronavirus than that there's these neo-Nazi spurgs talking on, was it Telegram or a 4chan, and they've purchased some guns and done some photos of them in these menacing poses.
At this point, they don't even have any guns. They haven't purchased any guns. Like, none of these guys, as far as I could tell, have any firearms or anything along those lines. That has been reported. You do have the police still going on their crazy raids all over the place. I just had one today. Actually, could you put the link up of the armed police responding to gunshot reports?
I'll bring that up.
Cheers. Yeah. So this was just published today. The police in Dunedin were called to a house. They heard gunshots and yelling. And the armed police turned up, and they found a young man playing Fortnite. So that's basically the state of New Zealand at the moment, is that we're at the point now where the police are raiding the house, their houses of Fortnite players. Everyone who was watching the show is probably aware that my house was raided in early January for unknown reasons, which hopefully we will find out eventually. There was a report a couple of weeks back of a similar situation where they again had done a search of you know, another family home with children around for firearms that had already been handed in. And so that's you know, they're not having much luck. We've got a new police commissioner now. Our old police commissioner has resigned. The new gun legislation has stalled in Parliament. There's been a lot of outcry about it, and the New Zealand First is not willing to commit to passing it. I think, you know, they know for sure they'll be out of Parliament in September if they do vote for it. So all of this is ground to a halt. One more item that's worth mentioning as well is Vinnie Eastwood, who I was introduced to by him being described as New Zealand's discount, also poor man's Alex Jones. But Vinnie Eastwood is basically a sort of a freelance conspiracy journalist, is what you might call him. He runs a good a show that he runs every couple of days, and he talks for hours about all of the weirdest stuff that anybody could possibly be interested in. And he received a sixth police visit in 1 year from the police today. And again, he's a guy who is, as far as I can see, one of the most harmless people in the country. And basically, sort of, you know, almost like a greeny environmentalist kind of, you know, slightly sort of anarchist leaning in a peaceful way anyway. And that's the kind of, you know, those are the kinds of people the police are visiting, because they have nothing better to do. That's the only justification we have at this point.
Well, we had in Melbourne on Wednesday night, because of the coronavirus, blink and you'd miss it. There was a stabbing rampage in Hawthorne, which went to Kew. The attacker knifed two women, one fatally, arriving at their Hawthorne home on Wednesday night before going on to stab a man to death near a Kew tram stop. The 34-year-old Roxwood Park man has been named as Mohammed Ibrahim, was shot dead by police after he tried to attack officers with one of his knives. The man has scant criminal history. He is not a person of interest to Counter-Terrorism Command, Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton told reporters, but the attacker had been flagged for mental health issues after attending a police station claiming Islamic State operatives intended to kill him. We are short of motivation at this time as to why he has done what he has done. Police awaiting toxicity results have discerned whether there was motivation for the attack. But this is the fourth the three other. We had the two city rampages with cars. You remember in 2017, which were put down for mental illness, and then just before the 2018 state election, there was the car bomb, and then the stabbing after that. And now we have this stabbing here, but it's always put down to, because all the perpetrators have been of non-white backgrounds, and but it's
and,
mental
and
health
tend
here.
To be belong to an obscure religion beginning with M, I suppose.
Mm. But it just shows you that, especially in the corona virus panic, that this has basically gone unnoticed by most people. But you see the Antifa and the media, they've been trying their best to make sure that this white nationalist terrorist attack from a year ago, everyone remembers that, and remember, you've got to fear these Nazis and white supremacists.
Yeah, and it is in the case of New Zealand, remembering this terrorist attack. I mean, this was the worst terrorist attack on New Zealand soil ever. Mm. And obviously, thanks Australia for producing our worst ever terrorist. Hopefully we do deport him back to Australia sometime.
I think. Winston Peters, he said that
he wasn't going to do it.
He made that reminder as well.
You're right. Yeah. So that really is the case in New Zealand. But yeah, again, the idea they're saying in New Zealand is like, oh well, it's people saying. People say things that are deemed, you know, racist. Like everything's racist. You know, this is racist, that's racist, the other thing's right. You know, it all starts with racism, or it starts with hate, some obscure, you know, definition of hate. It's like these things, these attitudes, they stick around. The internet makes them worse and brings them out. But they go out and they target normal people, go after law-abiding people, they go after conservatives, they basically try and shut down anybody who is to the right of Karl Marx and say, oh, you know, you're a racist, you're a fascist, you're evil. Mm-hmm. These people are not going to fix any problems. In fact, they are guaranteed to, you know, keep signal boosting this, where they make it worse because they're able to sort of create, they sort of create a reason for these people to stick around and exist and to get worse and to sort of radicalize in the dark corners of these you know, dark web.
Brenton Tarrant, he went dark before he carried out
exactly. Finding these people is just basically an impossible job at that point. You're dealing because he came from overseas, right? He was a foreigner who came from Australia to New Zealand. They're trying to find now, ooh, you know, do we have someone like this in New Zealand? Can we, is there somebody like this in New Zealand?
Yeah, and they
the
think
you're
that
not gonna know, you're not going to know until it's too late, basically.
Yeah. Like, as if it's
the one where the people you can see, the people you can find, the people who are out in the open, they're like 99 out of 100 times not going to be the problem. 99 out of 100 times it's the ones that you don't see coming, and that's you know, that's what they're furiously trying to figure out how they can prevent, and the short answer is basically you can't, right? This is why people should be allowed to defend themselves. This is why we should be, you know, continue to have open dialogue and not push people into demonize entire sections of the population where they live in these dark corners of the internet and foment mischief they will then inflict on whatever part of the population, and they will target whoever. The most recent one they thwarted in the United States, where a group of people they wanted to shoot up the gun rally in Virginia, where they had a gun rights, you know, Second Amendment gun mm-hmm. rights rally, where all these conservatives, and they just wanted to cause chaos and go in there, drive through there, and shoot at these people, so they could create mayhem, create chaos, and then hope that they could somehow rise from the ashes of whatever fire they're trying to stoke. So they pick their targets, they pick their tools and their approaches for maximum damage, maximum chaos, you know, where they think they'll have the most effect, which in New Zealand is basically exactly what happened. Looking back over this past year, what's happened. Mr. Tarrant is probably sitting in his jail cell laughing to himself still at this point. It's just an incredibly sad situation. I'm not sure if we will actually get a positive, you know, get something back from the Royal Commission where we can say, okay, look, this is here's a process that we can fix in terms of what the government is doing, because the government can't fundamentally fix this problem of nihilism and the lack of the lack of meaning and purpose in people's lives. That's not something you're going to fix by screaming racists at a huge section of the population.
Yeah, I'm not diminishing the terrorist attack at all. To brutally murder 51 innocent people and also live stream it as well, that's barbaric. And yeah, you mentioned that he came from Australia. He said in his manifesto that he deliberately chose Christchurch in New Zealand because it is the last place on earth, and he wanted to say that he wanted to prove that bad things can happen here. And but what we're talking, and this is what we talked about immediately after the attack, is that governments, after any sort of terrorist attack, whether it be white nationalists or Islamic, they immediately want to crack down on civil liberties and, well, in this age, internet freedoms as well. And that's why I mentioned that Brendan Tarrant was dark online, because he was secretly, coldly calculating carrying out this attack. And of course the left, they've done a complete 180. They love Big Brother, big government now. They want all the security agencies to monitor all the people like us. Mm-hmm. And that's why they want to promote this anniversary. And so as a reminder to government, or you need to increase your budgets to monitor all of these far-right people. And it all starts with, just a bit of a joke online. That's what they always say. Yeah. And of course, these people are posting in Stormfront or Iron March. They're, as the expression goes, they're LARPers. I mean, a lot of people talk tough shit on the internet, but they're the ones least likely to actually do anything.
Precisely. And that's the only thing they can poke at. You know, it's like they're looking for a needle in a haystack, and they've got some individual bits of hay that they can examine, and they're looking at the ones on the top and just looking at each bit of hay with a microscope as they can trying to find where the next thing will go wrong.
Tracking down Brendan Tarrant before the attack, because mm-hmm. as you said, it's come out in the Commission of Inquiry that he shouldn't have had access to those firearms.
We haven't had the entire commission come out yet, by the way, but we basically know from some bits and pieces that we know is the police failed massively in terms of giving him access to firearms. But somebody like him could have made a bomb, no problem. Which he said as much, which I could believe that as well. It's a case of you've got your agencies looking for these people that they can't find, because these people don't exist until it's too late, in that sense. Like they don't have a profile that you can track, and because you've got so much noise from all of the jokes that you're, or all of the LARPers that you're analyzing, You're spending so many resources on good luck finding the people who are acting normal, essentially, you know, who are pretending to be human. And then by the time that you actually see any kind of footprint, well, then it's too late, way too late.
It's just past the top of the hour, so we'll wrap up now. I've just got a news alert that the 2020 AFL season will go ahead without crowds for what the league says was the foreseeable future. Clubs were told by the AFL hierarchy of the decision Friday night. There was a Fremantle Dockers AFL player who was tested for coronavirus. It came back negative, but that's the next thing. What if AFL players start to test positive because they're cancelling a European football matches, which again, Europe, because there's the European Union, the Schengen area, of course, there's lots of travel in between Europe, so it's not surprising all these sports players have got the coronavirus. Our Australian Stock Exchange has been on a roller coaster all week. We're on a bear market yesterday with it dropping 25% since its high last month. It's rallied again today to finish, I think, 11% higher around about. And so we don't know whether the restrictions are going to get even more intense. We are getting new cases, but not new deaths, and all the deaths were people age 75 plus. It's all coming back to the little things that we can do to prevent the spread of the virus. Is just stopping slackers in our personal hygiene. Wash your hands with soap. Wipe down areas, just because I'm not sure about you, but hygiene was drummed into me as a child. But we've all become lax, as we haven't had something like this in many years.
Absolutely. And in my case, I'm my wife's always complaining to me about how much I wash my hands, although she suddenly stopped complaining in the last few months. So definitely personal hygiene is the way to go. I'm not sure if you had the same campaign in Australia where they said, oh, there's two steps to stopping coronavirus. Step one, wash your hands. Step two, stop being racist and xenophobic. So
how does step two work? Is that when you make an aggressive flare, there's spittles that come out and hit other people? That's the only way that I can think of that a public racist statement could infect someone.
But see, it's infected this disease of trying to look for hate, trying to spread to coronavirus, you know, spread to the whole coronavirus situation, where I believe Douglas Murray actually had a good article I read today on the saying, no, people are not being prejudiced. Like, the way that people are reacting is actually perfectly normal. And, you know, outside, like, we have had one incident of, I believe somebody some youths throwing bottles at an Asian man or woman up on the North Shore a few days ago. But outside of that, we've had no incidents of racial hatred or anything along those lines. And basically, it's the what they're saying is, if you're making jokes, if you talk about the Wuhan flu or the Chinese flu, you make some joke about that, then you're a nasty racist. These, you know, again, this is just all garbage that they use to hype up, you know, whatever it's going to be. It'll be hate speech laws next week or something. We'll see what the government comes up with. But we will call it quits for tonight. And I did get a final comment here that I should respond to. Somebody commenting on me drinking, you know, the gin. Gin helps to keep the coronavirus at bay as well. It works great for you know, these tropical diseases. So that's why, just drink lots of gin and you will be fine. It's the best antidote to coronavirus you can get.
Or maybe drink some Coronas.
No, you don't want the Coronas. That's what gets you in trouble. Anyway, it's been a good show. It's been a good show, and yeah, some of this just really frustrating for me, and I think for a lot of other people as well, in terms of the progressive agenda and all of the stuff, like, suddenly everything's racist, and it affects everything from, like, how people wash their hands to commemorating or remembering in having memorials for one of the biggest tragedies that New Zealand has seen. They try and ruin everything. Try and ruin all the fun. It's like there's no humor and no jokes anymore. And,
There is an upside to that is that the Antifa socialists they can't protest in the street anymore because for years they've told us to follow the science and doctors, and obviously public gatherings are now discouraged. So this is what Extinction Rebellion they were going to hold a protest in Melbourne tonight, march against Murdoch climate truth now. Postponing tonight's rally despite our earlier statement that we were going ahead. Science matters, public health matters. So I think that could actually help stimulate the local economy because economic activity won't be disrupted by all the super gluing to roads. Public resources won't be diverted to getting them unsuper glued and that. So They because that's how they get most of their publicity through their stunts. But now they are much more of they already were a health and hazard risk. But
very good. At least we finished the show on a more humorous note. So thank you for that. We're over time, so thank you everybody for watching. You can go to rightminds.nz for all of my writing, and most of my articles appear on the BFD as well. These episodes of Trad Tasman Talk also appear on the rationalrise.tv, where they get backed up by James Fox Higgins, who was mentioned earlier. So that's it from me. If you want to help out with keeping Right Minds website running or help me with my legal action that's ongoing, head to rightminds.nz/donate, and you can make some small donations there, and all of that would be very much appreciated. That's it for me. I'm going to be taking it fairly easy this month. I'll try and get one article a week out, but other than that, it's just going to be the show. Thank you all, and good night.
Yeah, and the Unshackled Facebook page is still being massively shadow banned, so please go directly to theunshackled.net to read our written content, catch up on our Unshackled Productions archive, this show, The Uncuckables, Wilms Front. I'll be back with Wilms Front 7 p.m. Monday on my YouTube and DLive channel, and you can follow me on social media. I've got my links on timwilms.com, and as I said at the beginning of the show, it's essential during this economic downturn. You still find room in your budgets to support our work, so go to theunshackled.net/membership or theunshackled.net/donate.
Thank you very much, and we will see you all next week at 6 p.m. Melbourne time and 8 p.m. New Zealand time.
Have a relaxing weekend.
Enjoy.